All right, so we recently had a sort of a really kind of an egghead discussion, amazing discussion on RX, which is something that you helped implement and which is going to be in the BCL, which is why you guys are here. So what we wanted to do today was get developers together to talk about RX and sort of what it means for the BCL, since it actually is going to be in ship with Dev 10. So without further ado, introduce yourselves and start writing on the whiteboard.
Okay.
How's that? So basically, let's talk about how you implemented it, right?
Sure.
How does it work? I think we understand the observer model now. And we definitely, with what Brian and Eric share with everybody, we have sort of the theoretical understanding and the philosophical understanding. Now let's dig into the details.
Yes.
Cool?
Sounds
great. I'm going to back away, and this is Dev on Dev.
Yep.
And
so,
introduce yourself.
Yeah, okay. We'll start there. So I'm Wes Dyer. And like you said, I work for Eric Meyer, and I've been working for the past year and a half designing and implementing the Reactive framework. I think people have seen a little bit of that. We're going to talk about a lot more today.
And I'm Kim Hamilton. I'm a dev on the BCL. We recently had a Channel 9 BCL interview talking about NetFX. What are we calling it? Dev 10 features. So, So, and we worked on bringing in two key interfaces from the Reactive framework, and those are going to be in Dev 10. So I'll be talking about those.
Sounds good. So I want to start with drawing a little diagram. And you may have even seen it. I'm not sure, Charles, what you did last time. But so we started off, I want to start off by drawing this little circle here. And this is your program, okay? And out here is the environment, which is kind of like, you know, maybe like a Windows form or like some website or whatever. But this is the code you write. And this is what the user and the, you know, device drivers, everything else kind of feeds into your program. So normally what programmers are used to doing is they're used to writing code that starts from the program and then communicates with the environment this way. It interacts with the environment. What is less common, although people do use like a venting code all the time, is the other way. So this is interactive. This is marker's not working very well. Do we have another one around here?
Okay, let's get a marker that works. Cool. Got a lot of editing.
So interactive.
Actually, we don't even need to edit. This is Channel 9. Thanks, man. Here you go.
And this is reactive, where the environment is initiating the communication. So the funny thing is, with this interactive communication, like I said, it's what we're used to doing. And there's a canonical type in the BCL for doing that, like for arbitrary interactive computation. And that is IEnumable and IEnumerator. And so, you know, with these kind of things, we're used to doing things like, you know, grab an enumerable, you ask the enumerable for an enumerator, and then you say move next, get the current thing, move next until it's done, right? But there is no canonical type for doing reactive programming. And so we were very concerned about that. That's kind of where we started talking to Kim about that, and about trying to get a canonical type into the BCL for doing reactive programming. So let's talk about, first of all, what these types are, and we'll talk about what we came up with, and then we can talk about how we got into the BCL, or how the BCL has those types now. So first of all, for the enumerable type, it really only has one method, right? And that is getEnumerator. I'm just going to make it shorter here. We'll call this, and it returns an IEnumerator, right? And this guy over here has a few things that are important. It has a current with a T. It has a move next. It returns a bool. And this thing is also iDisposable. And it has a few other things like reset and so on. But this is really the core of what it does. So this is how you interact with things. Now, the funny thing is, and I think kind of Eric probably mentioned this in one of the other Channel 9 interviews, what you can do is you can actually take this and you can just dualize the interface and come up with what you should have for the reactive side of things. So we're going to do that really quickly, and then we're going to focus on what that actually gives us once we do that. So if we're going to take the dual, all we have to do is reverse the arguments and the return type. So for whatever this reactive thing is, can we see down below, or should I stop here? Okay, so I will have iObservable here. And so we have to reverse these two things. So there's some method here that takes whatever the dual of this thing is. And for the observer, so this is the observer. So this is an observer here, iObserver. And then over here, we have to dualize this. So we have to have a T current. Now, the funny thing about this one is this one's a get only. And this one would be a set only. And then we'd have a move next that takes a bool and returns nothing. And finally, we would have a, since these guys can throw, now these two guys can throw an exception. That's kind of like, if, for example, if current returns a T, then it has a T coming out. But if it throws an exception, that's the same thing as basically returning an exception. So we have to have some method to do that. So we'll have like error that takes an exception, returns void. Now, of course, this isn't very nice. But we basically came to Kim and the BCL with something that looks, you know, vaguely like this. And of course, they helped us, you know, they came up with these great names and so on. So can you actually show us what the actual interfaces look like?
Yes.
Maybe we can even erase this up here and kind of show what it looks like.
Here it is. Okay, let's focus on iObserver first.
I bet your handwriting is nearer than mine. That's probably good.
Oh, and I'm blocking it. Okay, so actually set current and move next, those can collapse into one thing. Those, and we actually call that on next. Okay, so for error, we have that on error. And then you pass in an exception. And with enumeration, there's, so you say move next, and get current off of it. And move next returns false when you have no more things left. So with iObserver, you need a way of letting the observer know, you know, when you're done. So we have on completed.
And it's kind of funny because the move next is kind of has, so you, like you said, it has to do with the current. And so what you do in here is you'd set the current and then you'd call move next with true and set the current and move next with true. But then calling move next with true is the same thing as just not calling it, right? So in the end, you can just have just the false one without the argument, and that's the same as the completed.
Right. So I think originally the method names that you guys had were like yield, break, and throw. And those were actually really nice, but we went through the whole framework naming review process.
Yes.
And I don't know how long. I mean, I think we spent 3 weeks, lots of emails with different teams trying to figure. We knew the attributes of the names that we wanted, but there were things like, you know, we didn't want to conflict with names that could cause confusion in other types, like WPF types were one.
Or in the yield and throw, you know, that might conflict with VB's syntax, for example.
Exactly, yeah. So. Yeah. So we ended up with this, and then for, let's do iObservable.
And these all return void, by the way.
So with this one, you basically need a way to, you need a way to say, add observer. This is the one I'm not. Okay, we called it register in the end. So
no, we called it subscribe.
We called it subscribe in the end. Okay, I'm glad you caught me on that.
We went through a lot of iterations on both of these.
Yeah, and this is actually the way. This is actually the way you let an observer subscribe to the iObservable for notifications.
Let's not tell them the return type yet. Can we hold off on that for a while?
So we'll write X here.
Yeah.
Because that was actually a very interesting part of the design review process, too. So now that we have a sense of what the interfaces that we're adding look like, maybe we could talk about why we started looking into this.
Absolutely.
Okay, great. So we have basically a framework API design review process where someone wants to add types, and we have a few people that, like Christoph and a few people in the BCL, look through the types and make sure they have naming consistency, design consistency, but then also to make sure that there's, to minimize duplication in the framework. So in the BCL Channel 9 interview, we talked about, you know, adding tuple for F-sharp and some other people who are interested in using it, because we wanted to make sure that any tuple that we have can talk to each other. So F-sharp is actually a very interesting, client of our design review process, because they give us a lot of cool things to look into. Tuple, and then this would be another one. So what they...
I hope unit in the future.
Yes, we hope unit two. And there will be reason... Can I erase?
Yeah, go ahead. You can erase everything below your line now. But the key point there is basically just that innumerable and innumerator are intimately tied together, and where the innumerable and innumerator represents the canonical way for interacting with the environment, whereas the iObservable is about the canonical way for representing reactive computation.
So one of the F-sharp types that came up for design review was iEvent of T. And for people who follow F-sharp, this is very interesting to a lot of their users because it makes events be first class. So that means you can actually pass them around, pass them to methods, for example, and you can do things like transform and filter with them. So that type came up, and we knew that was very interesting, and we were thinking about adding specifically that type to the framework. So we started looking around, and we realized what we're looking at here was sort of a general notification mechanism. We knew that the PFX team had some type of related functionality on tasks. And we'd seen basically in various parts of the framework people starting to solve the same problem. So at that point, what we want to do is figure out what's the breadth of, what do all the solutions look like and how do we unify those? And in the course of that, we ran into Wes and Eric and their reactive framework. And so in terms of the general notification infrastructure, like for push-based notification, basically, these were the key interfaces that stood out. So what we wanted to do to start with is look into, making iEvent work with these and see where else it could be used in the framework. I can go a little bit into the, sort of that whole review process. I'm trying to think of what's the best. I'll just dive into it. So we added these pretty late in Dev 10. We wanted to make sure that we're finding the right solution for everything. So we couldn't necessarily put it on, if we were planning early in Dev 10, we could have that in the planning from the start. But given that we're kind of late, we're sort of focused on, what are people coming to the framework design review, what are they looking for, and how can we fit these interfaces into other types that are out there? And the reason that we spend so much time laboring over this is iClonable. So if you want to scare everyone in the framework design world, just mention this. So iClonable, it's not obsoleted, but the framework design guidelines say don't use this, don't implement it, don't use it in public surface area. And the reason is that it has a single method called clone, and we never bothered to document what this actually does. Is it a deep or a shallow clone? So whenever we're adding interfaces, we always add extra scrutiny around what are the semantics of the method. So
in the end, all you can depend on is the fact that it's not dependable.
Exactly, yes,
okay.
Yeah.
Sounds
so,
good.
And in fact, the other reason we haven't obsoleted it is that there are types in the framework that still use it, like the non-generic collections, array, things like that. And I believe in those cases they do shallow copies. But it's one of those things, like, as a general consumer of iClonable, you can't depend that someone else has assumed that as well.
Right.
So what we need to do then for the ones we're considering adding is make sure to vet those against all the candidates. So those included F-sharp and F-sharp events. PFX tasks. And then we had a few WPF types, observable collection, things like that. But I'll just briefly talk about this one, and then we'll get back to sort of the design of this specifically. So for PFX tasks, they have a means of, if you have a task of T, they have a continue with method. And you pass an action to that. And basically it's saying when the task is finished, and continue with this other task. So this is the thing that we wanted to consider for working in with the observable framework.
Because this is reactive, right? The programmer supplies something that the environment, this task thing, eventually will call back and call it to happen.
Exactly. Yeah. So basically, we look through the implementations of this for, you know, making sure is it preserving guarantees that the original implementer may have started with. So a lot of time we spent was looking into sort of threading and exception type guarantees. So for example, the observable doesn't necessarily need to worry about the threading guarantees of the observer. That's not part of the interface contracts. Anything that you do would be considered a contract on top of that. Basically just defining what are the responsibilities for each of the interfaces. So we spent a long amount of time with coming up with the right names for it, coming up with the right guarantees for it, and we think we land in a really good spot, not only from vetting it against framework types, but also from the work they had done with the reactive framework. And the Silverlight toolkit, I believe, is actually using this as well.
So. Yeah, I think we're talking with some other teams that are doing it as well.
Yeah.
So there's a few teams around that are starting to pick up that work.
Right. Yeah. Let's see. What would be?
So I have a couple of things, actually.
Yeah.
So it's kind of interesting because we use this type to do like reactive computation, right?
Yeah.
And one of the things we should probably talk about, the one very, very important contract that is implicit in all this is the protocol for how these things are invoked, mm-hmm. right? So with enumerables, what happens is you get an enumerator, you do that first, right? And then after that, on the enumerator, you say move next, and then you grab a current. You're not supposed to do current then move next, right? You do move next and current, until eventually move next returns false and you're done, or it throws, which is abnormal termination. So with the reactive framework, what you expect is to see an on next call, a series of these things, followed by a completed or an error, maybe, right? So what you see is you see like next with some value, like one. For example, if it's an observable of ints, you'd say like next one, next five, next three, and then you'd say complete, or there'd be an exception, or maybe it wouldn't terminate, in which case it'd be neither a complete nor an error. But that's kind of one of the strongest guarantees that we do actually have, is that mm-hmm. this will happen in that order. So,
right. Yeah, that actually, I don't know if it would be a good time to talk about this aspect of the design.
So let's do
one other gap here. One of the really cool things about the design, even when they took it to us, is that when you subscribe to an iObservable, it returns you an object that lets you unsubscribe. So this is kind of nice when you compare it to other observer-type implementations. Normally what you see is something like add observer, remove observer.
Yeah, attach, detach, all those kinds of things. You see it everywhere.
Yeah.
For example, .NET events are that way. Plus equals, minus equals for C# people.
Exactly.
Right?
And you could probably get more into the sort of detailed problems of it. But from our perspective, one of the problems that we had been seeing is that, people are not always removing their observer. We have problems like dangling events. And another problem that contributes to that is that you can't, if you pass in something anonymous, like some kind of anonymous method, then what's going on here? And say, even if it's not anonymous, then you have to keep track of this thing so that you can pass it to remove.
Yeah, you have to give it a name and then use that name twice.
So the cool thing with this is that it's returning you something that lets you unsubscribe. And where we landed in the end, this is where they had it at first and where it landed in the end, is that it's iDisposable. So it returns you an iDisposable when you want to unsubscribe, you call dispose. I won't go into the full details of that, but so when we first took it to BCL Design Review, we had this name, and people found it unintuitive. So you subscribe and you get an iDisposable. What does that mean? So what we considered doing was having something like an iSubscription, and then it would have something called unsubscribe. I won't spell out, but yeah, you get the point. And people found that more intuitive, but the problem we ran into is classic dispose problem. So on file stream.
Okay, go ahead, erase that.
Okay. And actually a lot of I/O types. We earlier had guidance to say, you know, users may not know what dispose means. It's kind of an unfriendly word. So we recommended explicitly implementing dispose and then exposing instead a method like close because people found that to be more natural. But we
I bet a lot of programmers do this.
Yes.
Because this is common, right? You have something that's like looks like this. And then you say, oh, I want a nicer name for it, right?
Exactly, yeah. So we have a similar, but not as bad, but a similar problem to the clone type of problem. So in this case, we've set an expectation saying, okay, we're just doing this because dispose seems like an unfriendly word. So then we would think that the user could expect that they do the same thing. It turns out in general throughout the stack, that's not true. So there are WinForms types. That will have a dispose and a close, but they do different things. So in general, we found that whenever we try to do something that's equivalent to dispose, it's in our best interest to just keep it called dispose. Yes?
I have a question.
Yeah.
So I'm going to stay out of camera. I don't need to be in camera. So in terms of when you call, like in .NET today, right? Let's talk about, do you have a resurrection problem in the sense that if I call, how can you be sure that all observers have been destroyed? What if I want to do that, right? So today, because of garbage collection, this doesn't solve that problem, or does it? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah,
I know why mathematically you use iDisposable. Brian taught us that in the last one. Because that's part of the mathematical duel.
That's
you
right.
You had to use iDisposable.
And then we'll talk about why it's useful today.
Okay, but also, again, so let's say what happens when, let's say I say...
So you subscribe with some observer, or a bunch of observers.
I'm going to use a bunch of observers.
A bunch of observers,
yeah.
Right? Now, in the end of the day, so really these are just interfaces, right? So in the end of the day, what's going to happen is that whoever the observable actually is, the concrete type, that is actually is the incarnation of this observable, the realization of it, will be responsible for actually making sure that those things are disposed in due time. And but one part of the contract is that if you, as a user of this thing, no matter what the concrete type is, if you call dispose for each one of those, they will go away. So if you do it from the outside, great. If not, from the inside, that might happen as well. But it's up to the concrete implementation. Like, for example, the person that did, oh, I guess it's gone here, but task of T, right? So task of T, when after he's done and he's run all the continuous, then he should have gotten rid of the observers that were registered with him. So does that answer your question?
It does.
One of the keys here, though, is that it does make it easier. So with events, as we were talking about, you have to name it, you have to keep track of it. And this provides a way that you can put in an anonymous method, but then you get the iDisposable, that's the way that you do cleanup. You know, when we give an iDisposable, that also has the recognition, you call dispose on it to unregister. So, I think we've made it easier, but yeah.
So the reason why I want to talk about the reason why we did this. So the mathematics say it must be so. But then the question is that useful in the end of the day, right? And so let's take a look at that. So the reason why we do this. So pretty much every other framework I've ever seen uses the add remove paradigm, where you add an observer and then you remove an observer. So why do this funny business about adding return something that removes an observer? And the reason why is because in the end of the day, what the iObservable is designed to do is not only represent what reactive computation is, but to be the type to allow composition. Right? We believe in compositionality as the way to control complexity in software, which abounds everywhere. And so that means if I was to take like some observer, say like an event, an observable like an event, and then I want to create like a composition on top of that, we'll show you some compositions in a second here, then that new thing that I'm interacting with, the composition of maybe some other observables, we need to be able to remove from it, right? And so in order for that to happen, the way that this happens, and it all falls out by using returning back something that unsubscribes. So in the end of the day, it allows composition. That's the real reason why it's useful. And I think we should dive down into some examples.
Yeah.
Is that all right? Great. Okay, so here we go. On the... I just have a little tiny console application here, nothing fancy. I'm going to have an observable. So, oops, hold on here. I'm all thumbs when it comes to laptops. Okay, so observable.return. So this is kind of like the unit function, if you're familiar with the M word, monads. So basically, you take like a value, and now this thing is now an observable that fires on next with one and then on completed. And so it's an observable that has, it's a stream of just one value with a completed at the end. And I want to look at that thing. So we'll say this is our O. And then we'll say O.subscribe. And we'll say console write line on next. Oops, gotta get the errors too. Exception. There. And done. So what I'm doing here is I'm using an overload of subscribe. This is part of the reactive framework that allows me to construct a anonymous. Basically, these three delegates are then combined to construct an anonymous observer. It's the three methods that we have here: on next, on air, and on complete. And so I'm supplying that. And there's other overloads that don't require you to supply all of them. You supply maybe the on next, and then on air and completed, or have defaults. So there we go, and we'll just take a look at what this does. So, just like I said, we get an on next with a value of 1, then a completed. But we can also create other ones, right? Because it's not just single values, like asynchronous type of thing. So this is like, so backing up, the return observable return is kind of like an asynchronous computation. It's like a task. When it completes, it has one value, maybe like 1 in this example, and then it has a completed. But some things have multiple values. So we can say like maybe 1 to 10 here. We can look at what that does. And that has like on next 1, 2, 3, up to 10, and then a completed, right? We can have errors too. But before that, let me show you composition actually, because we need to do that first. So we'll say, so O1 is now the same thing as what O was. And we can use link. And we can say, well, let's just add 1 to each one of those elements. And then we'll subscribe to O1. Right, and now we get 2 through 11. And it's not just, just because we have the methods, now we can also do link syntax. We can also say from X and O, select X plus 1. Right. Now, what I said earlier about composition, that these types really allow, it's a type that allows composition. So we have this thing that was represented by O here, and its type was iObservable. And because each of these different things, the combinators and the various concrete things that implement iObservable, they all talk the iObservable language, allows us to glue them together and talk about more about the coordination and the composition of asynchronous and concurrent things, than more about how it actually happens underneath.
So. To some people, this may look like magic. So is it okay if I ask you to drill into this?
Yeah.
So we have an iObservable here, and then we're saying from X and O. So to map this back to these interfaces, it's not clear how that would happen because you're using link syntax. You want to talk about what's going on?
Yeah, let's talk about that. That's exactly what I wanted to do. So that's perfect. Good. So let's actually talk about select. So suppose that we already talked about the types, right? We have these types, iObservable and iObserver. So now what I'm going to do is just going to implement some method. And I'm sure our viewers are familiar with link. And so we'll talk about how you implement select for iObservable. And then we can once you understand select, you kind of understand everything. So we have select, and what we know is that select must take an iObservable of t x's. That means it's of t to u, and a function from t to u f. And it must return an iObservable of u. And why do I say it must be this case? Well, if you look in the C# spec and they say how to implement select, they say essentially it has to have this form. So this is the form it has to have. Now, the funny thing is, we talked about we're not going to be geeking out today, we're talking about implementing, but unfortunately, I'm going to geek out for a second here. So basically, there's only one way you can implement this correctly. And that's all we can do, right? There's nothing else we can do. And the way we can do it is by just looking at the types. If we just look at the types, and then it just kind of just follows that it has to be a certain way. So what I'm going to use a language feature that doesn't exist, but you can emulate. And that is anonymous interfaces. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to say, well, select has to return one of these guys. So I'm going to return a new iObservable of you. And what does that have? Well, that has to have one method, which is subscribe. So I have to implement that now. I guess I'll start over here. Subscribe, which takes, because this is an observable view, has to take an observer of you. A view, oh. Right, and this has to return an iDisposable. So now, inside of subscribe, it has to return an iDisposable. So how do I get an iDisposable? Well, the only thing I can get an iDisposable for me is x's by calling its subscribe. So I'm going to return x's subscribe. Now, I have to give it an iObserver of t. But I don't have one of those, so I'm just going to create one. And that has to have three methods, but I'm just going to do the on next, and you can imagine what the other ones were like. So that means it has to have a void on next with a t value. And so there's only one thing I can do with a t, which is invoke f. So I'm going to say f of value. And now I have a u. And there's only one thing I can do with a u, which is I have this as observer here. I say on next of o. And that's basically select, right? We just kind of followed the types. I didn't even talk about what it should do or anything. Now, but we can talk about that. Now we can interpret what this means. And basically what it means is I have a select function. And when I call select, it returns back a new observable. Now notice that's the only thing it does. Just like with enumerables, when you call select on enumerables, it doesn't actually cause the source enumerable to be enumerated. It actually happens later on when you enumerate the result. Same thing here. It doesn't do anything except for construct basically an object that remembers the source and the selector function. Now, later on when I subscribe to that thing, what does it do? Well, it then causes a subscription to be made to the source at the same time. So when you subscribe to one thing, it kind of just spreads back to the sources. And then that thing will return back how to unsubscribe, which will then be forwarded back and returned out of there. And then finally, when this subscription actually has a value come through, then that value will be transformed with our selector function and fired off to the observer. And just everything works out.
Right. So I believe we probably, maybe in one of Eric's presentations about it, he had an example of what this would look like if you don't have the the ability, the composition that iObservable enables. And it's probably too tedious to show that now, but I guess it's a lot cleaner basically than the alternative.
That's right. In fact, you can try it as an exercise left to the viewer.
That's true. One other thing I was thinking about from seeing that is in the BCL we added the two specific interfaces, iObserver, iObservable. The reactive framework has tons of interesting relevant types to play with, like, so for example, an extension method to convert an iEnumerable to an iObservable and vice versa.
That's
so
right.
We're not putting those in the BCL, but we do want to get those out there. So reactive framework is currently figuring out how they want to release their types. If they can't get that done in the right amount of time, then we'll work with them to get on CodePlex or something like that so that
That's
people
right.
can start playing with
so,
it.
So after Beta 2 comes out, look for some sort of public technical preview of the reactive framework.
Right.
So one quick thing I want to show with select, and then we can go on to something completely different. So I drew up on the board what this looks like. If you actually look in the actual code, this is almost exactly what is actually in there. And so it basically is exactly the same thing, right? We have select, we have a source and a selector function. Then this is our way of doing these anonymous interfaces constructions. We basically pass in, we have a class that takes all the different methods that you want to implement. And then it's pretty much exactly as I said. The only thing that's different is you have to deal with exceptions. But besides that, it's exactly what it is. So really at the core of this, like we said, the observable stuff is really about reactive computation. And it's about, if you understand callbacks and continuations or events, any of those kinds of things, you understand what this is at its core. I do want to say one other thing, which is in composition. I want to hammer this point home, that in the end of the day, when you write like some sort of composition, you start off with some things out here, some observable things, and then you compose them, maybe like this, I don't know, and you end up with something that you're actually doing your query over, right? And here's a composition point, and here's a composition point. These things out here are like concrete, real, living things. Like maybe this is a task of T, right? Which happens to implement the observable interface or converts to it or something. And maybe this is a .NET event. And we also have combinators in the reactive framework to convert from .NET events into observables. And then maybe this over here is an enumerable, which was converted to an iObservable. And maybe this is an F-sharp, first-class event, which, by the way, is going to be using observables as the core for what they're doing. First-class event. So you have these concrete things that exist outside, but the thing is, because they're all using the same type, they can communicate. Just like the collections that you use today, they all are enumerable. So because of that, you can write these really cool queries over top of them, and you get composition. You can deal with them in some sort of common language. That's what iObservable is doing, but for the reactive side of computation. So.
Can you just briefly touch on the relationship between this, and just make it explicit, the relationship between this and highly concurrent, highly parallelized programming?
Yes,
right?
That's
so
a very good question.
Let's say I have 100,000 observers. I want to do 100,000 things, and I want an observer for each one. And I don't care when they get done. They're going to tell me, right?
Right.
And I'm going to deal with them like Eric throwing change at me.
Yes.
Just talk a little bit more
yes.
about that
I'd
story.
Love to. So I'll tell you one thing. iObservable and the reactive framework is not in the business of explicitly introducing concurrency. So what we do instead is we allow all these other people that are doing such a fantastic job, like task of T and .NET events and all sorts of other things that are like parallel computing and so on, to introduce concurrency into the world. What the iObservable interface, again, is about the composition of those things. So all these different things exist out there, but how do they communicate together? How do you glue them together? How do you do something bigger than each one of them to have like some sort of synergy going on? And that's the business that it's in. It's in the coordination and communication.
Exactly. So task of T, continue with, and related methods, they were doing their job just fine. The only problem is how do they fit with everything else? And so that's, has it replaced anything? And in fact, for Dev 10, task of T won't be implementing iObservable T, but those will be released as extension methods. And we hope in Dev 11 there's definitely talks about that. So
right. And coming to that point, so that was one of the talks we had a lot with the BCL, is that what comes first, the chicken or the egg in this case, right?
Yeah.
Because you have all these different things. You want to have this glue, this nice glue to put things together, communication coordination. But in order to do that, everybody has to have, some common language that they speak, in this case, the iObservable type. And so we talked about that at length. I think you probably remember those talks. And in the iEnumerable case, it was very similar, right? So iEnumerable came first, and then later on came iterators that built on top of that, and then later on came link, which built on top of both of those things. And so in this case, what you're getting is in the .NET 4.0, you're getting iObservable types, but then there'll be other things later on, wherever those things might be, that will build on top of that common language that they speak.
Yeah, even though we don't have a ton of types implementing them in Dev 10, we found that these were key to getting out, allowing people to build on top of them. So, so we do have the F-sharp events, and the risk, of course, is if we didn't get them out and then people start doing their own thing, it becomes much more difficult to start retrofitting. So.
Right. And that also answers why some author, you library writers out there, why you'd want your types to be iObservable. So, today it might seem like there's not a lot of stuff. Just like, if you were an author of a collection in .NET 1.0, you might have thought, well, why use iEnumerable? It's no big deal, right? But then going down the road, as we all speak the same language, then we can communicate and coordinate. And that's really where this is, the real value is.
So what's this M word you're speaking of?
I was trying my hardest not to say the M word, but you know what? I'm just going to say it. Monad, monad, monad.
Did somebody say monad?
In fact, we did.
By gum, it's like throwing on the bat light. if you say that, I'm going to show up.
Good. I'll do it more often.
This is brilliant work. This is very important. And I'm, you know, you and I had many wonderful jam sessions about this
during
the years.
Yes.
That we were almost years that we were doing. But I wanted to point out something. You of course noticed that iDisposable is the dual of constructing things, right?
Yes.
Taking something and turning it into thin air is the dual of making something out of thin air. And then you segued into composition, bypassing the F word.
What's the F
word? Well, I won't say that one because that one's absolutely forbidden. But there's the C word, which is category theory. And in category theory, all you have is function. Oh, there I said it. This is the other C word, composition.
Yes.
Function composition is the only tool you have in category theory. It's a tiny, tiny, silly little programming language. But if you honor it, dualism just falls out of category theory. I'll take all the arrows, turn them around the other way, and you get the duals. It's automatic.
You know what? I'm not very religious when it comes to programming, but I'll tell you one thing. I'm religious about my composition.
Yes, yes, and I'm glad to see it. And it's made a wonderful thing. You guys should be very, very proud of this.
Thank you.
Thanks. I'll say the M word more often now.
Okay, well, then I'll show up more.